A ransomware attack on Rackspace in 2023 left thousands of customers without access to their critical email data for months and led Rackspace to completely abandon the hosted exchange business line. On this week's episode of the Backup Wrap-Up, we discuss a detailed timeline of this event and, most important, the lessons that we can learn from it. The incident in this episode is one of the many stories that are behind the recommendations that you may have heard from me throughout the years. I'm W. Curtis Preston, aka Mr. Backup, and there's a reason I'm so passionate about this subject. It's because in my first job as a backup admin, my company lost an important database and I couldn't restore it. Since that moment, I've dedicated my career to making sure that would never again happen to me or anyone who bothers to listen to me. We take unappreciated backup admins and turn them into cyber recovery heroes. This is the Backup Wrap-Up. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, W. Curtis Preston, aka Mr. Backup. And with me, I have my consultant that will help reduce my level of starstruckness today.
I don't think that's possible.
I'm going to be worried, Shatter.
That sounds so. Yes. I think you should tell people who may not have caught that. Who are you going to go see today?
I'm going to meet William Shatner today. I am super psyched. Yeah. I actually bought it. There's an event. There's a premiere of this new documentary that's about William Shatner. And it's in LA. They're going to do the screening. They're going to do Q&A. And then there is a birthday party for him, his 93rd birthday party for him afterwards. Woo-hoo! And it's being held in the original, in the studio where they originally filmed the pilot. And so I'll also be meeting Kevin Smith. And hopefully I will, my dream, if I get a selfie with William Shatner, that'll be,
you'll be over the moon.
I'll be over the moon. Yeah. I met DeForest Kelly, I met Nichelle Nichols, I met George Takei, and this will be, there is one remaining original Star Trek member that's still alive, Walter Koenig. That would be the one person who's still possible to meet that I haven't met. But William Shatner, I'm super excited about that. So,
does it count as meeting if you go visit the gravesite of the person?
Oh, that's just wrong.
I'm just asking.
Just help me keep my heart pitter pat. I am definitely a fan, and meeting him would be very, very cool.
What's that? What is your, if you got a chance to ask him a question, what would it be?
It's definitely not going to be one of those, like, in episode 57, I'm not prepared for that question. I'll have to think about that.
Wow. Did I stump Curtis?
You did. You stumped me. Yeah. I'll definitely, I'm going to be so nerded out. Like I'm going to be, yeah. If I get to say two words to him, I'll be like, hi, I just hope I don't do, like, I've met a lot of famous people, and so many times I've been like, chill. But I remember there was this one person that I just randomly ran into in an airport, and I literally screamed their name like a 10-year-old girl. And that was very embarrassing. I just hope I don't go, William Shatner!
Sure he is used to it,
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. So this week, we're continuing our series about cloud disasters. And this one is pretty bad. And again, this is yet another story that's going to prove the point. Back your stuff up, right? Even if this is actually, this is a really good story that basically proves that even if the vendor is backing it up for you and the backups are included as part of the package, something so catastrophic might happen that those backups don't come in handy. Does that sound about right, Persona?
It does, but I have two comments about that. Two.
Okay.
The first is, this reminds me a lot about the OVH story that we did a while ago. So if you haven't heard that episode, go back, give it a listen, because it was also the case with OVH that they said they were doing backups, but people were not able to restore their backup because they were sitting in the same data center as a production and there was a fire. So not so good.
Yeah. And I'm going to say, so this story is about Rackspace, which I'm going to say I have no ill will against Rackspace. I feel for the people that had to go through this. The thing I struggle with is the ways in which Rackspace tried to deflect blame. Rackspace, the company, tried to deflect blame. And so based on that, we've got a pretty solid timeline of the events. Now, just for color, and I didn't know this part I'm about to say, I didn't know this until I was researching for the story. Prior to this event happening, Rackspace had already suffered a sharp decline in value. At the height of their value, April 2021, they were an $8 billion company. And by the time this event happened, they had dropped over 90% of their value. They were then at $800 million.
And as of today's recording, they are valued at $340 million, which is 5% of where they were at their high.
Right. Yeah. So they were already in sort of trouble. And I think that may be why they tried to deflect blame. So let's start with sort of before the story, right? So before the story, there was something called the Proxy Not Shell exploit. In September of 2022, it was publicly announced. And it allowed someone to gain control of an Exchange server. It was announced September 30th of 2022. November 8th, Microsoft released a security update, but there was a minor issue with the patch, and Rackspace claimed this was why they didn't install it at that time. But by November 17th, Microsoft had fixed that issue. You know, we talk about three things, right? Password management, patch management, and MFA. And then if everybody just did this, then it would have stopped, it would stop so much. And this story is so much evidence of that. Because November 17th, that minor issue with the patch was fixed. So they could have, and in my opinion, should have immediately put on this security patch, because it was such a huge exploit. There was a CVA attached to it, and well known within the industry. They should have immediately patched all of their Exchange servers. By the way, I should mention what we're talking about is that Rackspace had a hosted Exchange service, not Microsoft 365. They ran hosted Exchange on their own servers in their own data center.
Before you continue on, I think it's important to state that for that September 30th, right, there was a workaround that was deployed, right, that pretty much Microsoft was like, hey, we haven't quite figured out the patch yet, which will come out November 8th. But in the meantime, here's a workaround to make sure you don't get impacted, which Rackspace did apply, right? So they did apply, or they did not? They did apply the workaround.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, so but it's not a permanent fix, but it at least sort of protects you. For now. So then the other thing is, there's around this time, there were actually two exploits, right? So there was a Proxy Not Shell exploit, and then there was another one, OWASSRF. I don't know what that stands for, but that's what they called it.
Yeah.
Right. And these two are kind of related. And so the patch, though, that came out in November would have fixed both if they were applied. But the workaround that was applied in the end of September only addressed the Proxy Not Shell issue. It did not address the second exploit.
Yeah. By the way, the OWA most certainly stands for Outlook Web Access, would be my guess. I don't know what SSRF but stands for. But yeah, it is kind of complicated that basically that there was a patch that had they applied the patch, they would have fixed at that time unknown problem. But they didn't apply the patch. And then 2 weeks goes by, and then what happened?
And then on November 29th, Rackspace says that they were attacked by a group called Play, which gained access to their exchange environment using stolen credentials, and that they had access to some of Rackspace exchange environments, which if I was a customer on hosted exchange, I would be kind of freaked out.
Yeah, exactly, right? So they gained privileged access of their exchange servers. We're not sure if they knew in November, but because they first notified people December 2nd, literally at 2 o'clock in the morning, right? Based on the stuff that we have, they may have at that point realized what happened, and they were able to trace it back to November 29th.
And at 2 a.m., right? This is when they were like, yeah, here's what happened. We noticed something. And then they just brought everything down, right? They were like, yep, we're not going to allow any
more
access.
Pretty typical response, right?
Yeah.
The next part of the story is the one that really sets it apart. I don't know any other story like this. Their response was, and again, if you think about where they were as a company, this part maybe makes more sense. But what they decided to do was they said, you know what, this is going to take us a while. I'm making up words here. We've been thinking about shooting this thing in the head anyway. And so let's just move everybody over to Microsoft 365. So December 2nd at 2 a.m. is when they first started telling people that they had this problem. And by 8 p.m. that evening, they had made the decision to move everybody over to 365.
Yeah, that I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall in those meetings, right? When they were trying to
figure
out
what to do. I would not have wanted to be in the meeting.
That's why I said I wanted to be a fly on the wall, right? Just listening and hearing these conversations, because you know it must have been a difficult decision to come to, right?
Yeah. Because that would have been a competing service, right? So if it's not obvious, like if you used Hosted Exchange, you were very consciously using Hosted Exchange, not Microsoft 365. And you had reasons for doing that. And they're like, guys, this is going to take us a while. We're going to move everybody over to 365. But what did they not move?
So there were two things they did not move, right? Probably the most important thing was their emails, right? <Yeah. laughs> What people cared about with the hosted exchange service, right?
Yeah.
Because they basically said, we will recreate things for you, make it easy so you have all your stuff up and running in Microsoft 365, but we can't get you back all your emails yet.
Right.
Right. So that was one thing. I think the second thing, and I don't know if they were forthcoming with this, but the fact that with their hosted exchange implementation, they offered backup as part of the service.
Right.
Right. When they told customers, hey, Microsoft 365 is where you should be looking at. I do wonder if they told people, by the way, you need to figure out your own backup solution.
Yeah. None of the communications that we found between them and customers showed that they said anything. But the idea that they would, in the middle of the outage, basically abandon an entire business line, move everybody over to 365. What they did do was they were able, apparently, they did automate the process of creating the accounts for them over on 365. So you were able to, essentially you were able to start sending and receiving email relatively quickly, considering how long the rest of this took. Within a day, it looked like, or so, you were able to send and receive email using your old email address if you were an hosted exchange customer, and now you're on 365. You just didn't have access to any of the email you had received up to that point.
Yeah, which I go back and forth on that. It's like, great, I can send and I can see what people are sending me, but I have a lot of old stuff and I would be freaking out if I lost all of my old emails. Or a lot of times, if these are businesses and organizations, maybe they have contracts which are being sent back and forth via emails.
Yeah. Like literally stuff that you got today.
Yeah.
Right? Stuff that you got yesterday, stuff you're actively working on. And a lot of people use their email system as sort of a somewhat, sometimes temporary, sometimes permanent storage system, right? And they're like, I know where that contract is. It's in the email that I got, you know, 3 days ago.
And I can search for it. Suddenly, I can find it.
Boom.
Yep.
You're not able. Yeah. So on one hand, like you said, I would have wanted to be a fly on the wall because they're saying we need to do what's, we need to get our customers up and running again. We need them. We need to get them be able to send and receive email. And I think that was a good decision.
Yep. That's probably the most important thing to do first.
Yeah. The bad decisions happened way before this, in my opinion. This was a good decision because, as we're going to find out in the story, they didn't exactly have a good backup system.
Yeah.
At least not one that I would recognize, right? So they actually advertised backup as part of the service. And again, I'm going to put this out as this is why when I say even if the SaaS vendor advertised backup as part of the service, you might want to consider a third party. And I'll put an asterisk, especially if they charge extra for it, right? I think in this case, it was just included as part of the well, I'm going to put two asterisks, especially if they charge for it, because then that gives you an incentive to pay somebody else instead. But then I'm going to say, especially if they don't charge for it, which means they're probably not spending any money on it.
Enough money to do that. Yeah. I want to focus on that for a second.
Yeah.
Because I did remember earlier on in the episode, I said I had two comments and we only covered one. So here's a second comment.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Does this apply if you are using a SaaS or whatever backup product in and of itself? That you should have a second vendor, because who knows what that backup vendor will do, and maybe you can never get your data back out. I understand Rackspace, they offered backup and the backups didn't work. Right?
Yeah.
Now, there are a whole slew of SaaS data protection companies, or you could roll your own, right? In those cases, though, do you have the same recommendation that if I do decide to use a SaaS data protection company, I should probably use two SaaS data protection companies because I don't know if one can get me my data?
No. Yeah, no, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying it because I'm talking about a SaaS service and then hiring a SaaS data protection company. That puts your data in two different places.
Yeah.
I would not argue of having another one, but it's going to be really, it's already going to be a big enough cost. I think the idea of putting the data in two different, completely different protection zones, risk factors, you know, earthquake, already, flood zones, all of that.
It already diversifies it.
I think that already diversifies.
Okay. So now my second question.
I'm just saying that if you have a backup, if you have a SaaS service like 365. So 365 is about to start offering backup. And I'm just saying, I still like the idea of a third party copy.
Yeah. Okay. So now my second question, follow up to that is there's a lot of public cloud providers, right? That people hook into that leverage things like snapshots.
Yeah.
So they're just an orchestration layer on top. They're doing all the data movement. They're moving your data around. They're taking the copies. Do you have the same concerns with those as well?
I do. That's why, again, I like the orchestration companies, and the ones I like best are the ones that ultimately take a copy of the data outside, right? We use snapshots to orchestrate and to create the backup, and then we use something else to get the data out of, you know, your favorite cloud vendor. Again, getting it out, storing it in another place. Second best to that would be storing it in another region in another account. But, you know, this is just basically I think of, like, let's say AWS as NetApp, right? Yep. So I need another copy, a final copy of the data that isn't on AWS because of rolling code concerns, right? So you get a bug and it rolls, and takes out both primary and the backup.
Then are you also concerned, though, because a lot of these SaaS data protection companies are built on top of the big clouds?
So I do want to then make sure that they're stored in different regions and whatnot.
Yeah.
You can only go so far, right? Yeah. It'd be like the same would be true if we weren't talking to cloud and we were saying they also, your backup service also uses Solaris.
Yeah.
Right? At some point, there's a risk that you just can't get away from.
Gotcha. Sorry, okay. I know we never talked about that before, so I was very curious about your take on those.
Yeah, okay. So we were talking about December 2nd is when they made this move, right? Mm-hmm. They first mentioned that they believe it was a security incident on December 3rd, and then. December 2nd or December 6th, they say that it was a ransomware incident. And then finally 14th, they revealed the attack was from their words, financially motivated threat actor. Yeah. So we don't know the details of the extortion, but there was some kind of extortion. We also don't know whether or not they ultimately paid that money. Yeah.
And this goes back.
I advise as much as possible not to pay the money, but go ahead.
And this goes just the earlier thing about talking about a security incident and then changing it to ransomware incident. I get it, but I know you and I, we've talked in the past about vendors or companies should be more transparent to a certain extent about what's going on in order to build confidence in the public in terms of they have things handled, they're figuring things out, it's okay. And so I wanted to get your take on that messaging that came from Rackspace. Do you think that would have caused a lot of concern for customers or the public in terms of their ability to handle things? First calling it a security incident and then a ransomware and then sort of this back and forth on data.
I think it's possible that they revealed what they knew. Do have to be careful saying only what you know for sure.
Yeah.
The thing that needs to be understood at this point as they move through the story is that on one hand, I'm glad they did what they did. They moved everybody over to 365, got everybody working. But everybody's going to be clamoring for their emails, right, from the previous. But because they did it the way they did it, if they had migrated Exchange into 365, they could have brought the data with them, but it would have taken longer because they had dead servers, right? Yeah. And also just
they don't have the data yet.
A migration takes a while too, right? But because they did it the way they did it, the only option at this point is to create PSTs of individual users and then import those PSTs to those users on the other side. They said on December 18th that they had created I'm a little confused where, like, on one hand, they said that they had figured out a way to start restoring the affected Exchange servers, but they hadn't yet restored all of them.
Yeah.
Right. And this is when they first announced, they're like, so here's how this is going to work. We're going to restore an Exchange server. If you're on that Exchange server, you will then be able to export a PST file, and then you'll then be able to download a PST file for each user. And then you will then be able to upload that into 365. And they first announced this on December 18th and then December
20th. Which is already 2 weeks after they shut down the service.
Thank you very much. That is 2 weeks after they shut down the service, right? It's important to understand that by exporting it as a PST and then importing it, it's not going to be a perfect restore because I'm pretty sure that you're going to lose folders and all of that in this process.
I think some metadata too.
The fact that it's just, you're going to lose metadata too, right?
So in my mind, I'm thinking, oh, this is great. It's a way for people to do things, right? And then on December 20th, they said that they had just begun testing the above recovery procedure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they hadn't actually tried it out or done anything. They're kind of shooting from the hip. And I get it. They're urgently trying to figure out how to get the data back for the customers. But at the same time, it doesn't inspire confidence.
Yeah. And the thing is that if they had prepared for this eventuality back in the day, they could have created a different procedure. Because there are backup software products that allow you to directly extract PST data from a backup. Right. They do exist. It does happen. So if they had tested this beforehand, they wouldn't have done it the way they did it. They would have figured out a way to directly, instead of restoring Exchange servers and then saying, hey, customers, go get your PSTs. They would have been able to just directly create the PSTs. They would have figured that out beforehand. And
then it's just a matter of,
I think that would have been a much quicker method.
Yeah. And they would have just had to execute on it rather than trying to figure all this out. Because I don't know if a lot of folks understand, when you're trying to recover from a ransomware attack, right, you're not only trying to figure out everything that went wrong, but also all the extreme pressure you're under, lack of sleep, right? People yelling at you, possibly, right? Worrying about, am I going to have a job after this? Yeah.
I can't imagine the number of people that were, you know, companies that were yelling about how much money they were spending and blah, 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 right? Yeah. So December 22nd is the first day that they notified some customers that they could start retrieving some of their mail. This is 3 weeks since the incident, right? And it wasn't until January 5th, which is another, 2 weeks? That they said they had 50% done. This took a while.
Yeah. So here's my question, Curtis. I know we talked earlier about, okay, they should have had these procedures documented. They should have thought about them, right? And tested it out. Uh-huh. So then they had a process. But do you honestly think people think about these scenarios and walk through? Because normally when you're thinking disaster recovery or backup and recovery, right, it's like, oh, I lost an email, or I lost a part of something, or someone accidentally deleted a user, right? I think that the mind needs, or people's mind, people need to change and start thinking about some of these cases. But when they designed the system, do you think that, like, they were like, hey, I wonder what'll happen if the Exchange servers all get hit by ransomware and we have to rebuild and all our customers are going to leave us for Microsoft 365?
So I'll answer that in two ways. One is probably not, right? And two, they probably should have, right? Yeah. One of the things I talk a lot about in, you know, when I'm talking about how to design your systems and stuff, is that go get the most scary person in your environment and have them come up with scenarios, come up with recovery scenarios. This is the whole point of tabletop exercises, right? You get those super negative people that interject, well, what if? Well, what if, you know, we're down for weeks? Make the decision.
Like,
we talked about this a lot. Make the decision up front that if we get hit by ransomware, we're going to immediately move everybody over to 365. And if we do that, we're going to need to XYZ. Do it to recover this way. They should have been able to foresee this decision, right? Because by doing it the way they did it, again, and I don't disagree with the way they did it, but by doing the way they did it, they necessitated this weird double, you know, double or two-step super painful restore method that put a lot of the work onto their customers. And it took them months, right? Before everybody was at least able, we don't even know exactly how many customers actually were able to successfully recover.
Yeah. I think they said it was something like 3,000 customers were impacted in their hosted exchange environment, right?
Right, right.
They said, this was interesting, is that they also said that Play, remember Play is the name of the ransomware group, they accessed, to use their words, the email of 27 customers and said there is no evidence that they read it. what does that mean, right? So again, this is where you have to look at like legalese. They have the fact that they have no evidence that they read it doesn't mean they didn't read it. They don't have evidence that they didn't read it. Right? You can't prove a negative, right?
Yeah.
They downloaded the email of 27 customers. And so it's likely that there could be, you know, there could have been secondary attacks where Play goes after the customers. We didn't get any news of that. So maybe it didn't happen. But, you know, just when you see messages like that, we have no evidence that doesn't mean it didn't happen. It just means that they can't prove it happened, right?
Do you think, since you're just mentioning about this, do you think there are possible ways they could have leveraged security offerings, encryption, other things to protect these emails? So even if Play did attack their exchange server, I guess it depends on what level they actually were able to exploit the exchange server.
I mean, they had admin access to Exchange.
Oh, then all bets are off.
As far as all bets are off. So even if there was encryption, I don't know if Exchange has the ability to encrypt it or if they could store the data on encrypted drives. It doesn't matter once you're inside the application, right? Because the data, it doesn't have record level encryption or anything like that I'm aware of. But the other part, and this is, by the way, this is the part of the story where Rackspace tries to shift blame by saying, well, hey, this exploit that we got hit by was a zero-day exploit, which is true in that it was an unknown exploit at the time that they got hit. But if they had put the patch on that they should have put at a minimum 2 weeks prior, they wouldn't have been hit because that patch fixed the unknown problem at the time.
Yeah, I know we always talk about it on the podcast. It's patch, 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 right? When something comes out, especially something with this level of severity, right? It's like the Log4j stuff that came out, 2021 December? And what a mess that was as well. But everyone realized how severe of a security issue it was and started patching their systems. I think something similar needed to happen here as well. The fact that, I get it, large customers, you have hosts, you need to schedule downtime. But a high severity security issue like this that was being exploited actively, like there's no reason you should have waited 2 weeks to apply a patch.
Yeah, and this is kind of what I wanted to go at here. There's a lot of lessons that could be learned from this incident. One is third-party backup. If customers had third-party backup, which was totally possible, they would be done, right? They would not have suffered this outage. Just like the Salesforce outage in a previous episode, right? If they had third-party backup, they could have fixed it in minutes. And the other is, this really hammers home when there's a really severe exploit that is well known and there's a patch introduced for that exploit, you need to put it in now. Not, oh, we've got our patch management system, we do this once every 2 weeks or whatever whatever it is. Look at this company, basically, you know, a month from the announcement of the patch, 2 months from the announcement of the actual exploit, they got hit. And if they had simply just put the patch in when it was available, and I realized that it was available sooner and there was a minor patch, but that issue was fixed. There was 2 weeks between the time the patch was fully fixed and fully available and when this actually happened. And it was yet another, this was already a suffering company. And if you look at the stock value of Rackspace, it had another sharp decline. What did you say? Wasn't it 15%?
It was like 15%. Yeah. in December.
On December 2nd, which is the day they announced that this had happened, right? Yeah. And so, you know, they were already suffering, and this created yet another decline, and which did not recover. It did not recover from that sharp decline. Just think about this. Think about, you really have to prioritize that patch management system, right? You really have to make sure that you put in patches as soon as they come out. You know, high level, high exploit patches need to go in. And again, I'm going to once again say that I think the backup system needs to be at the front of the line, right? Yeah. Patch those first, because that's the last line of defense, and then make sure you know, in this case, the patch only applied to Exchange, but this is the point that we make. If they had just put the patches in, this event would have never happened.
Yeah. And you would still have 3,000 customers using Rackspace hosted Exchange, right?
Yeah.
The other comment I was going to make, Curtis, is given that they probably had the managed Exchange solution for quite a while, I wonder if they ever had a process. I know we've talked about it on the podcast, of going back and looking at their disaster recovery plans or their backup and recovery procedures. Or if it was just sort of, hey, we created this once, it should be fine. We never have to really use it, so we'll never go back and make sure it's up to date and all the rest.
Well, I mean, clearly they didn't account for ransomware.
Yep.
Right? A typical DR recovery scenario would have worked fine here, right? If the building caught fire, they knew how to they had backups, they knew how to restore their Exchange servers. I still think it took them longer than it should have, but they had a plan for that. But that plan, ransomware breaks a lot.
Why would ransomware be different than the building going up in smoke?
Great question. Because they likely were still fighting the ransomware itself, right? When the building goes up in smoke, they could just literally restore everything. It's going to take a couple days. But at this point, they have an unknown time.
Yeah.
On the moment of December 2nd, they're like, we have been taken down and we have no idea how long we're going to be down.
Might be a day, might be a week, might be a month.
Exactly, right? They're looking at these other businesses that are down for months at a time, and they're saying, we don't want to be that. We don't want to stop people's email for that amount of time. Boom, let's do over here. Had it been just a regular fire, a flood, or whatever, they should have been able to say, this is going to take us 3 days. Yeah. 3 days is going to stink, but it's not enough for us to abandon our entire business model and move over to 365. Yep. In this case, it was an unknown scenario, amount of time that they're going to be down. And so they decide to do this method that ended up making everything take much longer, right? And they didn't test for this method.
So, yes, I agree with everything, but I still want to go back to another clarifying point. Couldn't they have treated ransomware? Like, I wonder if they actually had disaster recovery plans in place. Because I don't know.
Yeah. I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt that maybe they did.
Because in my mind, right, if I had a ransomware happen, right, as a company, there are two options, right? One is I could try to figure out what all went wrong, rebuild my servers in the same data center, procure new hardware, all the rest. Or I could just treat it like a fire, shoot it in the head, completely disconnect everything, validate my DR site is still good, that there's no ransomware there, and then bring everything up or restore on clean hardware, etc.
That's like, if there's not ransomware or if there is ransomware.
Even if there was ransomware.
But the problem is if you have a solid backup system, you have a recent backup, and then you go to restore it, you know, you're restoring the ransomware.
Bad stuff. Yeah. So, but then that should have just been a matter of figuring out what is good and what is bad.
Right. Which is going to take an unknown amount of time. Yeah. That was the problem.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know if they had a DR plan. I do ask myself why it took them the amount of time it took them to restore all the Exchange servers. I just go off the message or the information that I have.
Yeah.
And so the end of the story is this. the company continued to suffer additional losses in the value of their company. They went from $800 million then down to $350 million now. And they are close. As of the taping of this episode, they are close to a restructuring deal. I don't know if this event had never happened, if how different the world would be right now, but it certainly didn't help.
Yeah.
So please, folks, all I can say is, you know, put those patches in when you, you know, and test your recovery procedures. All of the recovery scenarios, right?
And if ransomware isn't one of the recovery scenarios, then you need to rewrite your recovery plan.
You need to reconsider your recovery scenarios. Absolutely. All right. Well, I think this is a good episode.
Yeah. Don't be like Rackspace. This was,
you know, ouch. All right. Thanks, Prasanna. Thanks for the chat.
It was fun, Curtis. And I'm sure I will hear all about your event tonight.
You will be hearing all about it. You'll probably be getting some live chat or some live text during the event. I be safe out there, folks. That is a wrap.
The Backup Wrap-Up is written, recorded, and produced by me, W. Curtis Preston. If you need backup or DR consulting, content generation, or expert witness work, check out backupcentral.com. You can also find links from my O'Reilly books on the same website. Remember, this is an independent podcast, and any opinions that you hear are those of the speaker and not necessarily an employer. Thanks for listening.